Next case for argument is United States v. McDuffie. Also Mr. Tassif.
On a slightly different note, the district court erred in denying Mr. McDuffie's motion for a Franks hearing. This affidavit presented to a state court judge by Rock Island City Police Officer Eddie Conley mentioned that a day or two earlier a trash survey had occurred by the police wherein a garbage bag was taken from an alleyway and an amount of green plant material believed to be cannabis was found in that bag.
Is there any evidence in the record that Officer Connolly intentionally withheld the amount of marijuana when making out his affidavit?
No direct evidence, but certainly by inference, this is an experienced police officer who works closely with the Federal Gang Task Force in Rock Island and whose search warrants are seen routinely in federal court in Rock Island. And indeed, just 6 months ago, this court affirmed a conviction and sentence in Terrescence Mitten, which is cited in my brief, which was another Eddie Conley search warrant affidavit, where the government conceded there was no probable cause, but the government was saved by the good faith exception. In this matter, on page 24 of my brief in the appendix, the amount of cannabis seized from this 20 to 30 gallon trash bag is depicted. And I want the court to note the little baggie that the flake appears to be packaged in, that's what Conley put it in after it was found from the bag. This was not found in the trash bag, the little baggie itself. There was no packaging material. There was no residue on any packaging material. There was no drug ledgers. There was nothing more than that one speck of plant-like material, which the officer described in his affidavit was field tested for the possible presence of THC.
Given the neighbor's very detailed report, plus the fact that he had this long record of being a drug dealer, all the convictions.
There were five prior drug convictions, as referenced in the affidavit. There were accounts or episodes related by this unidentified confidential source, presumably someone living in the neighborhood,
right.
Who relates that in the earlier July, some 7 and 8 months earlier, in a very conclusory fashion, he saw the defendant conceal 2 ounces of crack in the backyard. Then February 7th of 08, he reports to having seen the defendant, 7 to 8 men coming and going in less than 5 minutes from this particular house. And then on February 6th, he saw the defendant give cash to 2 black males. As the district court found with respect to the remaining allegations, that wouldn't cut it for probable cause under this court's decisions of United States versus Peck. There's no corroboration. There's no basis of knowledge. There's no track record for giving reliable information. It simply wouldn't wash.
What additional corroboration do you think was required of the CI?
Well, at least some basis for knowing that this matter concealed in the backyard was a controlled substance, some corroboration with respect to a controlled buy, or something that would account for 7 or 8 men coming and going at an unknown time of day or evening. I mean, certainly nothing from which reasonable inferences can be drawn by the issuing magistrate that controlled substances would be in the house to be searched. And this is where I respectfully submit our case is so different from Briscoe and other circuit decisions where small amounts of controlled substances are found in trash bags. Almost every one of those cases, you have amounts of controlled substance, say, as residue on packaging material. Or in Briscoe, there were 40 seeds and 25 stems of marijuana plant material. Or there are drug ledgers or other activities, such as packaging materials, from which the issuing judge can infer that there is continuing criminal activity taking place in the house to be searched. I dare say that inference can be drawn when the amount of cannabis in question is actually nothing more than this one little speck. How then do you draw inferences, any inference, more than just a guess or a hunch, that based upon that speck, you can infer that there is controlled substance in the house to be searched?
Let me try to answer your question. Tell me what you think of it, of the answer, and that is, this stuff is valuable. You're unlikely to throw very much of it away deliberately.
Absolutely. But of what value is this lone speck? And why would any self-respecting drug dealer pitch valuable commodities? Again, if this
Except
is all
the
they got...
Except by accident. Mm-hmm.
By accident? Accidents can happen. But that this little speck in a large sealed trash bag allows the inferential bridge to go from street into the house to search, I respectfully submit it is not reasonable to draw such an inference. And Officer Conley's manner in which he framed this issue in his affidavit manipulated the inference that the judge drew. It begs the question, what quantity are they actually talking about? And that omission is what should allow us to get a Franks hearing on remand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tassif. Ms. Mullen? I want to do something very irregular, but since you're the same lawyer, and Mr. Tassif is the same lawyer. Going back to the Slate case for one second, did the police ever interview the roommate?
The police interviewed the roommate at the scene. That some police officers remained there is my understanding.
Pardon?
My understanding is that not the same police officers who interviewed Mr. Slate, but there were a total, I think, of nine officers originally.
Officers entered the house?
Nine officers entered originally, and then only four remained in the house, two with the roommate, two with Mr. Slate, and then one performing some forensics on the computer. The others walked back outside of the house.
So when Slate was driven off, she was then interviewed in the house?
That's my understanding.
So what kind of cars did they arrive in?
The non-allergic officers.
They arrived in.
I don't know what kind of cars all of the officers arrived in. I'm not sure that's in the record. I know that the officers who transported Mr. Slate back to the station, I believe it was a Dodge Intrepid civilian car, not a police car.
There wasn't a van there?
You know, I don't believe that the record speaks to what kinds of vehicles the other officers arrived in, Your Honor.
It had no cage. He sat up front.
No. I think Judge Posner was asking
whether
in terms of all of
van.
The other officers who arrived, what kinds of vehicles they were driving. But no, that it was a civilian Dodge Intrepid that Officer Bowers drove Mr. Slate to the police station in.
Okay, I'm sorry, and this doesn't count against you.
It's my time. Start over. All right. May it please the Court, Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. I was happy to hear at the end of Mr. Tassif's argument that he looped back into the issue that we're here to address today, and that's the very narrow issue, the only issue that's raised on appeal about whether or not the judge clearly erred in denying the Franks hearing. That's the issue that we're to look at today. And in order to get to that point, Mr. Tassif has to get out of the gate. And to get out of the gate, he has to make that substantial preliminary showing that the officer intentionally or recklessly omitted this material. And there's simply nothing on this record. There was nothing in the district court to suggest that that was an intentional or reckless omission. And even beyond that, once you get beyond that, there was not a shred of evidence about that. You still then must demonstrate that omission would have been material to the finding of probable cause.
Did Officer Connolly attempt any surveillance on McDuffie's residence to, you know, verify the CI's claim of nonstop drug traffic?
It doesn't appear that he did in the record, Your Honor. It appears that the corroboration that he sought was a utilities check of the residence. The utilities checked out to Mr. McDuffie's long-term girlfriend. He also checked criminal history. The girlfriend and McDuffie were engaged in many criminal involvements together, and then he did the criminal background check of Mr. McDuffie, which showed a lengthy criminal history involving convictions for dangerous drugs and involvements with distribution and possession.
How recent were those convictions?
You know, I don't have that right at the tip of my tongue, but I believe they spanned the course of several years, and were some of them at least were relatively recent to the information given by the neighbor. And the trash rip actually occurred the day before the execution of the search warrant, so that information was very close in time.
In my mind, I have one more question for you. So I might as well just get it out there. Are there any cases that you're aware of that would uphold a probable cause for a search involving such a very small quantity of marijuana?
I mean, literally, standing alone?
Yeah, literally a speck.
Right. I did not find a case where we have cases out of the Eighth Circuit, not out of this circuit, where residue was enough. Now, whether this is more than residue or the equivalent of residue, I don't know. I think it's important in this case that it's not just the speck. We wouldn't be standing here today if we had this. Well, Mr. Tass wants to call it a speck. Of course, I want to characterize it as something larger than a speck or a particulate, but this quarter-inch leaf or stem of marijuana, we wouldn't be standing here today saying that that would support a search warrant of someone's house standing alone for distribution. That's not this case, of course. And again, I want to loop us back just for a minute to the very narrow issue, and that is whether or not the only thing Mr. Tassif is asking for on appeal is this remand for a Franks hearing. Because, it, of course, if we get to that point, we're not discussing Leon here today. That's why that hasn't been part of the briefing. And in order to get that remand for the Franks hearing, again, he has to get out of the gate. And there's just simply nothing here that would suggest that this officer intentionally or recklessly omitted this amount. An amount is an amount. It says nothing about quantity. So had the magistrate had a question about the amount in the trash, then the magistrate could have asked that.
Ms. Bellin, maybe this is just 20/20 hindsight, but I would have thought that would be a natural question for the magistrate. Mm-hmm. And it would be a natural thing for somebody to include, an experienced drug officer who knows he's got an ounce and a half of marijuana, is going to say that in an affidavit, right?
Yeah, I think it would depend on the circumstances. Probably typically he would. That would be very, very rare to find something like that in the trash. And I think that's the significant point here, is that was found in the trash.
My point, though, is that in the enterprise of investigating drug crimes, amount is always relevant, highly relevant. It's a natural question for somebody who is writing an affidavit or somebody who's reading it. Mm-hmm. When you say an amount, you'd want to know how much, right?
I would think so.
I find it hard to believe that this omission of the specifics was unintentional. I think it's you may be on more solid ground in arguing that it's not material because it's the trash, but that's...
And again, both hurdles need to be cleared. I think that because the officer is talking about something that was found in the trash, and typically officers are finding either minuscule amounts or more often residue on bags and other packaging materials or residue within the trash, that the officer may not have felt compelled to say the exact amount. I see that my time has expired. Thank you.
Mr. Tassif?
Recklessness is normally defined as a conscious disregard of a substantial and unjustifiable risk. You have an experienced police officer here who is framing the affidavit in such a way that it naturally, logically, begs the question, what amount are we talking about? His omission in explaining that is the material fact, because we respectfully submit that had the judge known what amount was referenced, the judge would be just as ill-prepared as Ms. Mullen and I to cite any decision from any jurisdiction that would allow for a probable cause finding based on that amount alone. In response to Judge Rovner's decision about time period on priors, paragraph 5 of the affidavit for search warrant references 5 convictions for dangerous drugs, but no time frame listed in the affidavit. No further questions. Thank you.
Mr. Taylor. We thank you again for your argument, and we thank the defenders for these two cases, and we thank Ms. Mullen for her excellent representation of the government.